Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of the PreparedX Podcast. Can't believe we've had 28 of these episodes already. Time is flying by. We've done some great interviews recently. We've done a lot of interviews recently, actually. So this time I'm taking a step back a little bit, and I'll be talking probably for about 15 to 20 minutes on a very important subject that really has come up extensively over the last year and a half within corporate crisis management, and that is the briefing cycle. And I'll explain what the briefing cycle is for those of you that you don't know what it is in a minute. But I just thought that this podcast needed to be put together just based on a lot of our experience over the last 18 months. And so anyway, I'll go into it in a second here. And it'll probably enlighten you to something that you may already do as a corporate crisis management person within your organization, or it might be a new tool that you can add into your armory of your crisis management toolkit. It really will help you advance your team along in terms of its ability to come together and manage crises. So anyway, I'll get straight into it now. The briefing cycle, so, you know, what is the briefing cycle? The briefing cycle really is an organized meeting in the midst of what could potentially be the early stages of an incident that could turn into a full-blown crisis. And so, corporations, in my experience, and this is talking a little bit back from my military time, you know, the briefing cycle really comes from the military. And the militaries over the years of the centuries really have done a good job in being organized because they've had to be organized. They've had to come together in a disciplined fashion and really have a good, solid way of making sure they utilize their time effectively. And so what we see in corporations is obviously, you know, the many, many corporations have very good discipline when it comes to daily business activities. They have to. That's their business. But it seems that when they're faced with some kind of event that impacts them, be it a small fire, be it a cyber event that starts to bubble, be it some other issue that starts to raise its ugly head. And then when that pace picks up and it becomes a crisis, or it becomes much more of an event, the organization and the discipline of their daily routine goes out the window, and there seems to be chaos almost in some cases, certainly panic, and that discipline goes out of the window. So anyway, the briefing cycle is a disciplined process that hopefully, if it's done right within organizations, or if it is done right, should I say, will help you and help your team remain disciplined during those difficult times. So what is the briefing cycle? Actually, I'll just take a step back. What I'm going to cover in this is the briefing cycle, which I've just briefly touched on, the advantages of having a disciplined briefing cycle. I'm going to talk about the initial briefing cycle and the ongoing, the continual briefings that take place. And then I'm going to go into the three steps that we created that will help you really put together an effective crisis management briefing cycle. And then we'll just talk at the end about what's next and how you can practice that and integrate it into your current crisis management planning. And so that's kind of what the agenda is for the next 15, 20 minutes. And so, what is that briefing cycle? The one or two other things that I just want to touch on, I think I've basically explained it in general terms, But, you know, it really helps create situational awareness. So, and if it's disciplined enough and the team comes in to that environment and they're led by the leader and they have somebody who's coordinating the actual briefing cycles, you will create good situational awareness. So we're all aware of what's going on across the board, you know, at each cycle. And again, as I mentioned, it's a regular disciplined meeting that takes place. And again, you know, it could take place hourly. It could take place every day. Again, every situation is different. And so it really depends on the scale of the event, and it depends on how often you decide as a leader to bring your team together. There are many different factors, which I'll touch on a little bit later on. So let's talk about some of the advantages of the briefing cycle. And so one of the advantages, it helps clearly define realistic and achievable objectives early on. And that's the importance here, is it's important to get together early. Don't leave it too late. And I think that's one of the mistakes that we see both in our review of corporate crises that have happened, but also through our crisis simulation exercise practice, where we run these exercises with organizations. They'll not pull the team together early enough, and so they'll wait, and they'll wait, and they'll wait, and they'll say, okay, well, now we need to activate the team. And so we always advocate to, you may not want to, you know, name the crisis early on, or you may not want to identify as a crisis early on, but there's nothing wrong with bringing that team together into that first briefing and setting some expectations early on. And so that will help the team come together in a disciplined fashion, sit around the table, and start that process. You may end up not going down the path of having continual briefings. You know, the event may not turn out to be anything significant. It may not be a fast-paced event. Things may, you know, not transpire the way you thought. But it's good to get that team in early, so at least people understand that something may be bubbling and they may need to come together on a regular basis. One of the other things you need to ensure, and again, it's probably an advantage, but, you know, make sure you've got the right people in the room. Okay, so you may already have roles and responsibilities identified. There may be a roster already, a team list that you have. So make sure that you bring the right personnel in the room. There may be people that are not on your regular crisis management roster that maybe within the organization could add key value based on whatever the, you know, specific event may be. They may not be a common function that's on the roster already. So why not bring them in? Bring them into that environment as early as possible and bring them into the briefing cycle so they can add value to what might be a response that's required from that particular individual or a department function. So it's an opportunity, as I mentioned before, to create situational awareness. And again, I think that the more people you bring in from the team early on, the better, because there may be somebody within a functional role that may have one question or one thought or may have heard something from his or her area of the business that may help take the discussion down a different path. It may help prevent the situation from becoming worse. So anyway, I think more minds around the table and on that phone early on, the better. And we certainly see advantages to that. If it's kept in this silo for too long and it's not released, I think, which is a tendency for organizations to do that. But I think if you can get as many people and experts around that table from your team as early as possible during that briefing cycle, that's certainly an advantage. And I think the briefing cycle also reduces rumors. And again, that if you've got that larger team around the room, it helps you manage information as early on as possible. And so you don't want another area of the business you know, starting to talk and think what's going on, you need them to have the facts. So if you need them to be represented, be it human resources, legal, whoever it may be, you know, it's good to have that awareness across the board. And that certainly will reduce those rumors, which is, again, a fairly common thing that we see. You know, we see text messages flying around. You know, somebody's got a relationship in another area of the business, or somebody's got a relationship out at the site, which is, you know, on fire, or out at the site, which is, you know, in the middle of an event, be it, you know, whatever it may be. And those text messages, those emails, those phone calls, all those different communications start to fly around. So it's important that the briefing cycle cuts, you know, helps reduce some of that. It's never going to go away, but it helps reduce some of that, because you want the facts coming from the crisis management team. And so that reduces a lot of those rumors once you have the right team and the right people in the room, so that they can go back after the during the briefing cycle. And I'll talk about this in a second. Part of the process is when they come together in that disciplined fashion, we have our discussions, then they go back to work on the various challenges. They can take the relevant facts back, and they can take the message that the crisis management team, the corporate team, wants everybody to have. And so, again, reducing rumors is another advantage of having a disciplined briefing cycle. It also, I think authority is important, especially as things start to heat up. We need to know who's leading the charge in terms of the effort to respond. So who is the leader? And then the other roles and responsibilities are very clear. So who's in charge of various different different aspects of the crisis. And these should have been predetermined, both in planning documents, but also practiced, so that the team comes together, they understand that somebody or a specific area of the business owns that area of the crisis. And that's really important. So the briefing cycle early on will clearly define that as well. So you may have some people that are not there, and they're normally responsible for that part of the crisis. Well, then the early part of the briefing cycle will define, well, your number two, or the number two for that particular function, is now in charge and will lead that effort. That's really important. So that's another advantage of that briefing, that initial briefing cycle. And the other one I have here, the final one, what I will say, I think I've used the word discipline probably 20 times already, and I'll keep going on about it. It is a disciplined activity, and without it, you know, and we've seen this, and this comes from experience, again, over the last number of years, where we've run these exercises, and when we present the first inject piece of information, the first part of this simulated crisis, to the group, the very first thing that happens when they get the team together is everybody's talking over the top of each other. Everybody's trying to have their say on what they think is happening. And so it's those first few moments, in some cases, first few hours, or even days in some cases, depending on the scenario, when it's really imperative that you get organized. So getting organized as early as possible, and having that disciplined discussion, disciplined meeting, having the briefing cycle be disciplined, is really important. So you do not want it to be chaotic. And I can tell you, whether it's fear, because there's been an explosion, or whether it's fear because there's some kind of other attack underway, or whether it's fear because we don't know enough right now. Whatever it may be, it's important that the leader leads, and that that environment becomes, you know, a very disciplined environment. So I'll just talk briefly about the initial briefing cycle, which takes place early on, and then we'll talk about the ongoing briefing cycle. So really, the initial briefing cycle, again, is that first period when you come together to try and understand what is going on. And so in a fast-paced event, emergency, such as a fire, such as some kind of explosion, or something that's changed drastically quickly in your environment, then the initial briefing cycle can be very hectic. And so we need to know what the current situation is. And this may take place out in a parking lot, right? So if you've had to leave the building, if you've had to evacuate, or this may take place in an office, but you're actually dealing with another asset, another facility, another building that's experiencing this. And so you may be in a safe environment. But you know, just think about that. Where will you be as a team, and how will you get organized? That's really important. So the initial one, you know, we're concerned about life, right? Is everybody safe, especially if it's that kind of event? What's the criticality of what's happening? What assets have been exposed? Is it, you know, again, is it personnel? Is it buildings? Is it data centers? Okay, and then start to get yourself, you know, organized. So, you know, other maps, other visuals, or other, you know, screens that we can start to use and start to put together an idea of what's going on. So these are all the things that can start to happen. You can set those initial objectives as a leader. And what are the priorities right now? And you may in those early stages just have one priority, and that is the accountability of those people that you're looking for. So again, if it's using the fire example, if you're getting people out of a building, you know, one of the first things you need to know is, do we have everyone? So what is the current and then planned actions? What are we going to do right now? And again, they may be just those few immediate priorities in this initial briefing cycle, because it's a fast-paced event. It may not be a fast-paced event, it may be a slower event, in which case some of your current and planned actions may be midterm, maybe short to midterm actions, but what are they? So start to think about what they are. So if it's relevant, are there any unseen organizations, any public safety individuals or other members of your group that are going to the site to support it? So are the first responders, any regulators, or are they any internal support or others? Okay, so you need to know that information. So if it is a fire, if it is some kind of active shooter event that's going on, there will be obviously responding organizations. So that's in that initial briefing, it's good information it's good to know who those organizations are. So we can also start to assign resources, and that could be based on predetermined roles and responsibilities, as we mentioned before. Are there additional resources that are required? Who are they? You know, when and where are they? And is it relevant right now? Again, you know, there's a lot going on in those first few moments, so every situation is different. Think about those additional resources. We may not be discussing that at this stage, but again, Each situation is different. And then if it's at all possible, can we have an initial impact assessment? What does this look like? This is an ongoing, basically this should be an ongoing discussion, and somebody should be responsible for the overall assessment. So you may be making assumptions at this stage based on what you're seeing and what you're hearing and what information you're receiving back in, or you may be experiencing it firsthand. So it's good to have a thought around, okay, you know, this is what the initial assessment looks like. This is how bad it is right now, and this is how worse it could get. So again, that's planning. And then, once we finish off this initial briefing cycle, you know, when are we going to come back again? So the leader should then define, okay, I want you back here within 1 hour. Go away, get more information, start to work on what actions you have to work on, and then come back within the hour. Be back here at 1600 hours, or be back here tomorrow morning at 0800 hours, whatever the case may be, depending on the situation. So that's the initial briefing cycle, and then we have the ongoing briefing cycles, which will continue. Very similar information as before in terms of what we're looking to achieve. These ongoing briefing cycles may be slightly longer in length, but as a leader, okay, you need to be able to prepare and facilitate each of these briefing cycles. And what we recommend is that the crisis coordinator, so this is someone who would be able to support the leader and prepare for each of these briefings. That's really important. And so in a typical global organization, we would see a global team, a regional team, a country, and even a country leader in some cases that would lead each of these briefings. And then at the site level, a general manager or facility manager, whoever that may be, would lead the briefing cycle. Again, being supported by a crisis coordinator. Typically, as you're giving the briefing as a leader, you want to be brief and to the point. You know, we don't need to, if there's things that we don't need to know about right now based on the current situation, then we don't need to discuss those. Yes, they can get raised at a certain time when it's relevant, but time is often very valuable. And so we need to be on point with what we want to discuss, you know, during the briefing cycle. So obviously relevant information is only shared, set new and updated realistic objectives based on the situation as it may have changed. So some of the assumptions that you made before, have those assumptions changed? Did they become facts? What is the current, situation, and have our objectives changed? Documenting the briefing cycle is really important. So is that a separate person from the crisis coordinator, or, you know, is that a scribe that documents that? It's really important that we document those discussions. And then you set the time for the next briefing. Is it 30 minutes? Is it 4 hours? As I mentioned before, each situation is different. Remain disciplined. The leader sometimes, if the leader is... someone that is the same level within the organization as other crisis leaders around the table that are in functional roles, then that sometimes can be a challenge for that leader. So, the leader should stand up and take charge of that situation again, because those discussions can start to run away and people can start to talk over the top of each other. So we have to have a disciplined process for that. If the leader... the leader should probably start with, and I'll use operations as an example. If there is a fire somewhere or at, one of the sites, or the leader may start with facilities if it's a facilities issue and get the most recent updated information. And then only relevant functions should be involved in that discussion at that time. Unless someone else has got something critical to add, then you can move on fairly quickly. And the briefing cycles, in the early stages can be fairly swift. As the issue starts to pan out, as it becomes more time, then, more functions can get introduced, be it logistics, be it human resources and other elements. Obviously, communications is critical and probably critical from the very beginning. And so anyway, think about how you would facilitate that as a leader. How would you go around the room and have those discussions? You obviously want everybody to have a say at the end. Is there anything we're missing at the end of the briefing? Is there anything that anyone has to add at this stage? And then you give everybody opportunity to say, well, have we thought about A, B, and C? Okay, no, we haven't, but let's think about that as we move forward. And then one thing I've added here, meetings may still take place during recovery. So if once you get through the event and you go into a recovery investigation mode, how did this happen? You still may have a daily meeting, a weekly meeting, to make sure that we do our lessons to be learned. What happened? How did it happen? How can we rectify this and improve to make sure if it happens again, we are prepared for it? And so anyway, the three steps that I've discussed there, I'm just going to touch on briefly here. And these three steps, I've wrote a blog about this, which will connect to this podcast. So these three steps are really important, and it'll help you, put a process in place for your own briefing cycles, really. We didn't see anything out there, so that's why we put this three-stepped process together, and it really helps, professionalize the current crisis management toolkit, and it will help you create a really clear path, really, for what will be or should be a successful crisis management process. So anyway, what are the three steps? The first one is prepare, as we mentioned before. Before you have that meeting, that briefing cycle, you can't just go in blind, right? So we have to have some idea of what we want to achieve in that briefing cycle. So you, as a leader, you work with the crisis coordinator. There are some organizations that will have a briefing cycle report or a form that will help with that process. That works quite well. Certainly, if you're a coordinator, that document becomes very important for you. So first step is prepare for the meeting or the briefing cycle. The second one is the briefing itself, as we've discussed. And then the third is the action. What do we do afterwards? Okay. And so I'll discuss these. I'll spend probably a minute on each of these three areas now before we start to wrap this podcast up. So the first one is prepare, as we mentioned, you know, set the objectives during that initial briefing cycle, document the facts and assumptions. Okay, so that's the prepare phase. Before we go into the meeting, we need to show little details like the conference bridge details. Do we have the right number to call into? Has that been distributed? And is the conference line secure? Or are we using a conference line that is open? So just be, there's some small finer points as you start to prepare that as a leader and as a crisis coordinator. So the second one is the briefing itself, as we discussed before in a little bit of detail. That's, you know, bringing the team together, get them in the room, get them prepared, you know, make sure they're in the room, you know, start with the most critical group. And again, using that example of operations or facilities, where's the issue at? Might be IT, might be your computer incident or security incident response team, if it's cyber related. And then you start to gather and document the new facts, you know, what's the current situation, and also, you know, clarifying your previous assumptions. So we made some assumptions prior, in our prior briefing. Have those assumptions been identified as facts, or do we need to negate those? So set the next actions for the for each functional team. So as teams then start to leave the briefing, they know they've got to go away and work on certain action items. And then again, the last couple of things I've got here is obviously the process is facilitated by the crisis coordinator, but led by the leader, and then obviously remain disciplined and organized. So that's the second step, the actual briefing itself. And then the third step is we go away, right? We leave the table as functional leaders. The crisis team splits up for a period of time. We go away. We work on our various areas, various actions that we've got to work on. We find out more information. You know, we go out. We gather more facts. We may end up as a functional lead. You know, again, let's use human resources as an example. As the human resource lead on the crisis team, I may go away and sit down with my team. So I may have a separate meeting with my team, bring my team in, and then we get to work on what we've got to get to work on. Communications, obviously, they're going to have an extended team as well. Corporate communications may bring in social media. They may bring in all their other team members around the table to have their own briefing about what's going on and what they need to do before the next briefing cycle. So that's really important. This is where step three is where we act upon those actions that we need to take care of before the next briefing cycle. And then we prepare, right, for the next briefing cycle. We get our information, and it may not be everything that we wanted, right? We may need to make some more assumptions. We may not have all the facts still at that point in time. It may still be a challenging and very complex environment that we're dealing with. And so prepare ourselves to go back into that meeting again, or to that briefing, to the next briefing cycle, based on the time that we were given by the leader from the last briefing. So that's the cycle that we go through. Again, first one is prepare. That's the actual crisis management team, crisis coordinator and the leader prepare for that. The briefing itself, again, we then go away and then we act upon that as functional leaders, and then the process starts again. We come back into that environment. So that's it, really. I mean, that's the process. We've got this podcast about this information. I've written a couple of different blogs on this over the last couple of years, some smaller ones that are part of other blogs, both in my LinkedIn profile, but also on preparedx.com, where you can find our blogs. And so what's next for you then? I think this should be a discipline that is practiced. It certainly should be practiced in exercises as you start to prepare your teams. As your teams get more advanced, practice the briefing cycle, practice separating, going away, coming back, gathering new facts, having that disciplined environment, walking through the various steps that we discussed. Obviously, during real events, you need to be disciplined. So, you know, hopefully, this process will help you have a disciplined approach to your own briefing cycle. So naturally, through those events, you will be able to practice this as well. And so that's all I have for this one now. This is hopefully been good information. If it has, what I'd like you to do is share this podcast with your network. We'd really appreciate this. And if you haven't already, you can sign up for our regular newsletter, which we push out every 2 weeks. It has the most recent blogs, most recent podcasts, as well as a lot of other information in it. And so if you go to preparedx.com, you can sign up for our newsletter via the newsletter on the website there. So that's it for now. Until next time, have a great day.